Support for Jim Pease's Talk of Iowa Wildlife call-in program comes from the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, reminding you that habitat loss is a major threat to Iowa's wildlife. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese for Greg Shanley. So what's your favorite nocturnal bird of prey with large forward-facing eyes and ears, a hawk-like beak, and a conspicuous circle of feathers around each eye called a facial disc? There are 195 species worldwide, 21 North American species, and 11 in Iowa. The owl, did I hear you say? Good choice. Whether it's the eastern screech, great-horned, snowy, burrowing, barred, great gray, long-eared, short-eared, or northern saw-whet, we love our owls. It's Wildlife Day on Talk of Iowa with Jim Pease. We'll discuss how our state's owls are faring and take your calls and answer your emails. Talk of Iowa Wildlife Day with Jim Pease after news from NPR and Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa for Friday the 15th. I am Dennis Reese, sitting in for Greg Shanley, who is ill, and we wish Greg a speedy recovery. And it's Wildlife Day on the program with Jim Pease, Extension Wildlife Specialist. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Great. Owls, what a great topic. We're going to focus on owls this hour.
Right. I do want to start out with apologizing to our regular listeners to the wildlife program because they probably expected me on Tuesday and heard the governor instead.
That's right. That's right.
We got upstaged. You know, I offered that he could come on after us, but, you know, it just didn't want to work out that way, I guess.
Turned you down, huh?
That's right. That's right.
Jim, I'm going to let you do your own owl sound effects today. I
okay.
could have found some recordings, but we talked on the phone, and you said, hey, I can do owls. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, that's good. Well, who really gives a hoot?
You know, that's,
no. There'll be owl puns, I'm sure, all hour long.
Well, you have to start with that one. We're going to take your, and don't be owly about it.
No, yeah, well, that's right. Yeah. There we go.
866-780-9100. That number is toll-free. Questions about owls or other critters, if you're dying to find out about some other critters, we'll talk about whatever you wish this hour, but we want to focus on owls. Email is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Well, Jim, here's a quotation from Shakespeare. I thought that would be a classy way to start here.
Sure.
The clamorous owl that nightly hoots and wonders at our quaint spirits.
Ah, that's
good. Isn't that great? Yeah.
That's a very, very nice, nice quote. And it is classy. It's far too classy for this program.
that's what I thought. Well, how are owls faring in Iowa?
Well, it depends on the species. And you mentioned 11. I can only come up with 10, but that's okay. In Iowa, we have basically three major species that are very, very common across the whole state of Iowa. And these are the ones that I think most of our listeners are familiar with. The great horned owl, it's the larger of the three, stands close to 2 feet high and has those prominent sort of ear tufts. Now, those are not ears in any way. They are ear tufts. They're merely feathers. They're merely for species recognition, sort of decoration. They use them a little bit when they're trying to attract the opposite sex, but they're not ears in any way. And they're certainly they look very threatening too in some ways. So they're a good defense mechanism. Then there's the barred owl, B-A-R-R-E-D. They don't have, they're a bit smaller, more like a foot and a half high. They don't have those ear tufts sticking up, so they have a rounded head. And the front of them has vertical barring on their belly and horizontal barring on their chest, so they're just below their head. So that's why they're called a barred owl. And then the more diminutive, the smallest of the three, is about a 6-inch, 6 to 8-inch high little owl called the screech owl. And the three of those make up the vast majority of the owls we have in the state. All three of those are really non-migratory. They're here year-round. And actually, they're pretty site tenacious. Once they establish a territory, they're pretty much for life. They don't really migrate around very much at all. There are several other species that are uncommon to rare in nesters in Iowa, and that includes the prairie owl called the short-eared owl, nests on the ground. The burrowing owl, which actually nests in mammal burrows underground. The barn owl, B-A-R-N, and this is one that a lot of people, some people call them monkey-faced owls, and they're very uncommon in the state now. There's been a lot of recovery efforts trying to bring them back, with not much success at all. However, they are common in other parts of their range, and they have a huge range, clear into Central and South America. So they're fairly common elsewhere. And then the long-eared owl. This is another owl that occasionally nests in Iowa, but is a more common winter visitor as much as anything. And then we have three species that occasionally migrate to Iowa. The snowy is the one, the white one that I think most people are familiar with. Comes down every 2, 3, 4 years, whenever the vole populations and the lemming populations in the Arctic, where they actually are from, get so low that they can't find food, and so they will migrate south, and we occasionally then see them, especially in northern Iowa, but northern half of the state, but sometimes in other parts of the state as well. The very, very small, even smaller than the screech owl, is a little one called the northern saw-whet. And
where'd that name come from?
Yeah, it's a really strange name. It's because of the sound they make. It's the one owl call that I cannot do. It's very mechanical, and sounds like a saw, the sharpening of a saw. If you took if you've ever heard a saw being played, it has that sort of metallic, weird sound to it, and that's what their call is like. It's very, very strange. And then extremely rarely, we occasionally get the great gray owl, which is a northern boreal forest owl. And they come down extremely rarely into Iowa. Occasionally we'll see them in Minnesota and Wisconsin, but very rarely into Iowa. So those are the 10 species. If maybe you had another one.
Let's see. I mean, here's my list I got off of, the authoritative Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, okay.
Eastern screech owl,
uh-huh.
Great horned, snowy owl, northern hawk.
Northern hawk, that's the one, yeah.
Okay, so you don't agree with that.
Well, it's an occasional, I would say a rare visitor to Iowa. It's called northern hawk owl, again, it's a boreal forest owl, much like the great gray, would be very rarely in Iowa. So, okay, that's 11. All right, you're right.
All right,
good.
I've heard them. I've never seen one. I don't know why. I wish I could see one.
Owls? What? Really?
Yeah,
well, it's interesting because they are moving into, or have moved into cities in the last couple of decades, and are doing very, very well, even inside cities. And the reason for that is great horned and barred owls are both reasonably common in cities and towns around Iowa now. The reason being that we have what are called leash laws, meaning that we are supposed to keep our dogs and cats inside. They can't be running around untethered or unfenced. And as a result of that, we have a lot more rabbits, a lot more ground squirrels, mice, things like that. The things that dogs and cats that used to roam freely in our towns and cities killed a lot of are much more common in cities now. And a lot of gardeners will attest to that, how common rabbits are in cities. And predators, including owls, have responded. We commonly now have foxes inside city limits, occasionally coyotes, and certainly lots and lots of owls and red-tailed hawks. And as a result, they have great horns in particular do very, very well inside cities, and because they're so flexible in their food habits and their nesting habits, they will nest in just about. They're not picky housekeepers. In just about anything, they'll take a broken top of a tree. I've seen them nesting in old hawk nests or crow nests that are pretty dilapidated. You know, they're not careful housekeepers at all. And they, rather than building their own, they'll steal from some others.
Mm. We've had a lot of extreme cold weather here the last few weeks. What impact has this had on the owls?
On owls, probably nothing. In fact, the snow has probably made it easier for them to catch prey, because they're particularly rabbits, because our rabbits here, our cottontails, are not like snowshoe hares farther north, where they'll change colors in the wintertime and be better camouflaged. Our rabbits are brown year-round. And having a nice white background makes them very visible against the snow and at night. So it probably hasn't impacted owls much at all. In fact, great horned owls, they are the earliest nesting bird in the state. And some great horns are already laying eggs right now, believe it or not.
Wow, is that right?
Yeah. They'll by the end of the month, there'll be a number of great horns on nests, incubating eggs already.
And they can keep them warm?
Yeah. They have a pretty low metabolism of all the owls. They seem to have a fairly low metabolism, and so they develop more slowly. They have a fairly long incubation period and a very long sort of nestling period, up to 8 weeks in the nest before they even emerge and come out on the branches. And when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because then by the mid to end of March, early April, you have lots of migratory species coming back. In terms of birds to eat, and lots of other small mammals, rabbits and that, having their first young of the year, and squirrels and all kinds of things. So there's plenty to eat for those youngsters when they really, really need it. And so it's a really very, very adaptable critter. They've done fairly well.
We've got calls coming in. Jim, let's take a call before the break. Tom is in Iowa City. Hi, Tom. Nope, wrong button. Okay. Well, I'm having trouble here getting this button to connect. Let's see if that works. There we go. Tom, are you there?
I am here. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Go ahead with your question.
Quick question. Well, a story and a question. A few years ago, my wife and I were in the front of our house one evening in the fall and heard a big ruckus outside and looked out, and it was I don't know what kind of owl it was. It was huge, and it was taking down a huge crow, which I've never seen that before, and they were wrestling around in the front yard, and then the owl took off with the crow in its clutches, and we never saw anything but feathers the next morning.
Wow.
Was wondering if that was typical. I mean, I've seen owls take mice and voles and rabbits on occasion, but never. I mean, they're about the same size. It was very kind of horrifying, actually, to see that. Is that common?
Great horned owls will indeed take crows.
Well, let's continue that line of thought here in a minute. We need to take a break, so hold on, and we'll get back to the conversation with Jim Pease on Wildlife Day here on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Past 10, Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese for Greg Shanley, and we were talking to Tommy, still with us, about an owl carrying off a crow. I can't even picture that. But
they do indeed take crows, and as I say, they're pretty opportunistic predators. And crows are, crows in the wintertime especially are sitting in these roosts, and you've got 40 or 50 crows in a single tree or more sometimes. And, the owl flies over and says, this looks delicious and easy taking. And so it's not at all unusual for crows to be eaten by particularly great horned owls. But the crows get back at them. They have a chance to get back. And you probably have gone outside in the daytime. And if you listen, you'll hear these crows it's a different type of caw that they will make when they are mobbing something. And they'll frequently mob predators. They, if they see a fox coming through, a bunch of crows will start doing this mobbing behavior. And if they find where the owl is roosting in the daytime, they will mob the owl and just make his life miserable. Mm. So he pays them back at night, but the crows have the daytime.
Tom, are you still there?
I'm still here, yeah. Kind of amazing story, but yeah, it was just amazing. I couldn't tell which kind of, it was dark, so I couldn't tell which kind of owl it was, but it was, we heard actually the rustling in the tree. In fact, I think we saw the tree shaking first and then hear this big thud and look out, and sure enough, there's two of them just really going at it.
Yeah, yeah. And because crows are very smart birds and have learned that cities are good places to roost in the wintertime. They're 5 to 10 degrees warmer. There are lots of buildings that give off heat. They have buildings that block the wind, and they're often very mature trees that they can roost in. They've learned to like cities as well, and so the great horns and the crows have both adapted to the city life, as it were.
Tom, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-780-9100. Julie Englander, who's our resident bird expert on staff, is sending me notes here.
Aha.
She says, saw whets have a special way of protecting themselves. They stay still when scared. They play possum.
Yeah. A lot of owls will do that. Great grays will do the same thing. Great gray is a huge owl. It's even larger than the great horned. And some people think of them as really kind of silly because you can get so close to them. Saw-whets are the same thing. They will often just get up against the side of a tree and try and pretend like they're a lump on the tree. They both have a very good protective coloration that blends in with the forest very well. But this playing possum, being as still as you can, is quite common in the animal world, from rabbits to foxes, deer, all kinds of things will stand perfectly still or sit perfectly still and hope that you don't see them. Because it's a good response to predators, because predators are often looking for movement against a non-moving background. And so if you stay still, perhaps you have a less chance of being seen.
A lot of people in office cubicles follow that strategy, don't they? Get through the day.
Maybe there might be an analogy there. That's right.
Let's go to Barry in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Barry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, it was last week. I was woke up in the middle of the night by an animal making noise outside.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, I went outside and there was just a rabbit head there. I was thinking maybe that was an owl that did that. What do you think?
Very likely. In fact, you may have heard the rabbit scream, and you might think, oh no, rabbits don't do that, but they will scream. They have a and they will just scream like crazy, and they won't scream for long when an owl catches them, because those talons sink right in and make quick work of the rabbit. But it's quite likely that what you heard was a rabbit scream and the tussle that then ensued and then silence. Did you find fur on top of the snow then?
No, I just seen the head of the rabbit that was there. There was no fur or anything. I looked for like dog tracks and stuff, but all I seen was like it looked like the snow was moved around, and then there was the head there.
Oftentimes what you'll find, particularly with the snow, it's a great time to get out and see what's happened the night before, because you can see the results in the snow. You'll actually see the wing imprints as the owl takes off. You may see a drop of blood, a little bit of fur or feathers, depending on what they've taken, and then you'll see where the feathers actually touch the surface of the snow. The warmth of this week will make that more difficult, because you need a fluffy snow to see that, but you'll often see that left behind. I'm surprised that you'll see that you found the head, because often the head is the very first thing they will eat. And that sounds awful to us, but when you think about it, it is the highest source of protein and fat in the brain, and the most concentrated source. So they'll often eat the head first, and the muscle is much lower in nutritional value, so they'll often eat the head first. And, of course, owls, like many birds, they don't have teeth, but they have a gizzard, and they have a specialized stomach that actually takes the hair and the bones and forms a pellet inside the stomach. Once they've digested off the rest of it, and they regurgitate that, they burp it up, and you'll find the pellets then underneath their roost trees hours later. Where they, and if you take them apart, and I know Dennis would love to do this, taking apart.
Oh, man.
It's the biologist in me that finds this fascinating. You know? You take them apart, and you can figure out, based on the hair and the bones, what they've eaten and how many of each one. And there are actually a lot of school kids are doing that with owl pellets these days in their science classes.
This is making me hungry. Is it lunch, is it lunchtime yet? This might be a good time to ask you, Jim, what an owl call sounds like.
Right.
Well, are you ready for this? Or
yeah,
this...
sure. Anytime. I've done a lot of owl calling over the years with groups of kids and adults and families, all kinds of folks. And the three main ones that you'll hear that the barred owl is probably the one that's the easiest to remember and to recognize, because often we put human words to a bird call so that we can remember it. And the barred owl says, "Who cooks for you? Who cooks for y'all?" Okay, so it goes,
okay.
And you may hear them doing
that is so fantastic. Have you been on Letterman or anything?
No. lots of practice.
Yeah.
And you may hear them doing what's called the monkey call. And this is just an incredible call when you're camping in the woods with your kids and you're telling them that everything is fine. And then you start hearing this call and you think, what did I say? Because it's a greeting call that when they get close to one another, when you have several barred owls around together, they'll start doing this. And it's called the monkey call, and it's unnerving if you don't know what it is. The larger owl, the great horned owl, has a different pattern. It doesn't says who cooked for you. It's a deeper call. They're a larger owl, usually much deeper in their call as well. And it sounds like this. It goes, and
sounds like W.C. Field. Or something.
It sort of says, "I am a great horned owl. Aren't you?" You know, something like that. Then the little screech owl has two different calls that people may hear, and it's not a hoot. It's a tremolo, and it sounds like a little like this. It goes. And then they have this long whistle, and in order to do this, you have to whistle through spit. Okay, so you can try this in the shower.
Okay,
every morning, so it goes like this. It goes. So you can make those calls, and they may respond. As a matter of fact, now this is not the time of year to be doing great horned owls because they're nesting now, and so they're very, very territorial.
Mm.
But certainly barred owls. If you hear that call, you can call them back and see if you can get them to come in.
Julie says a screech owl sounds like a whinny. Is that your opinion too?
Yeah, tremolo or a whinny. Sure.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Jim, you are so good. I am absolutely amazed at this.
Thanks, Dennis. Lots of practice.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. So in 6 minutes, we'll be back. We'll get to the calls. We have lots of calls this morning. So everyone who is on hold, hang in there. We'll get to your questions in about 5 or 6 minutes after the environment report and a check of weather here on Iowa Public Radio's Wildlife Day continues on Talk of Iowa, Iowa Public Radio. Ten 36 Wildlife Day on Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese, filling in today for Greg Shanley. And our focus this hour is on owls. And Jim Pease is with us, Extension Wildlife Specialist. Jim, we're in awe of your ability to make owl calls.
Yeah, that's my only talent. You know?
Oh, no, come on. No. here on KOWL All Radio.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Job.
Well, owls,
you know, these nocturnal predators, and they have this whole series of incredible adaptations for being nocturnal predators. And one of them is that they have those talons. Those claws. You might say, in fact, that owls are very talented birds.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
I knew you were feeling owly, so I thought I'd cheer you up a little bit. So,
I'm keeping track of all of this, by
the
way.
Yeah, right.
Also says on Wikipedia here, Jim, that owls are silent in flight. How do they do that?
Well, they have lots of special feathers. If you took a feather that you find of any kind of bird and you kind of tear it apart and then you kind of smooth it back together. You probably did this as a kid. And what you're doing by smoothing it is you're preening that feather. And effectively, most feathers, particularly flight feathers, have little, if you looked at them under a magnifying glass or a microscope, you'd see that they're actually made up of little hooks and barbs. And what you're doing when you're preening, you're hooking those hooks and barbs back together. You're sort of zipping up those feathers to make them a solid feather again. Well, there are many feathers on an owl that are specialized so that they don't have hooks and barbs. If you look at the leading edges of the flight feathers, the feathers around that go all the way down to the toes, a lot of the other feathers don't have hooks and barbs. You cannot zip them back together. Mm-hmm. And what that allows to do, it functions like I think it's called an aileron on an airplane wing. It breaks up the air currents. And
wow.
So instead of hearing that whoosh, 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 mm-hmm. what you hear is you hear nothing. because the air is broken up and the air currents then are feathered away, if you will.
Very interesting. Let's go to Mark now, who's been waiting for a while in East Moline. Mark, hi.
Hello?
Yes, we're here. Go ahead.
Hey. Very interesting program. I've got a biological question for you.
Okay.
When I was very young, I won't say how long that was, but I never saw any red-tailed hawks. I never saw any eagles. And I remember 10 years ago going from Galena basically down to the Quad Cities and counting over 80. And I thought it was really amazing. And my question, I guess, is, how did the owls survive? Are they considered a raptor? And how did they survive the DDT thing?
Very good question. Both hawks and owls are not being eagles, but hawks and owls are much, particularly red-tailed hawks and great-horned owls, are very... They don't have a single source of food, so they'll eat a wide variety of things. Great horned owls would eat everything. In fact, they're the primary predator on skunks.
They'll eat carrion.
Yes, they'll eat carrion. They'll eat rabbits. They'll eat cats.
They'll
eat other owls. They'll eat some mice. Take the occasional pheasant. That sort of thing. Ground squirrels. That sort of just a wide variety of food. Whereas eagles are highly specialized. Eagles, another species that was very affected by DDT, brown pelicans. They're highly specialized in their food supply in fish in particular,
right.
And they tended to the DDT tended to build up in the food chain in certain species and aquatic species in particular in fish. And when when eagles would take fish, that DDT got built up in their system, causing the eggshell thinning and eventual drop in the numbers of birds. So red tails and great horned owls are much more varied in their food supply, and so it didn't build up in their systems. Now, it's not to say that other agricultural, other chemicals couldn't eventually build up, but we've tended to go away from what are called organochlorine pesticides, and those are the ones that really build up in the fats and in birds.
Mark, anything else?
If I may, just one more question.
Sure.
I have gone through 53 years of life and seen maybe two owls.
Mm-hmm. It's more than me.
Yeah, and when you did your calls, they were very, very reminiscent of things I've heard before that I didn't recognize.
Sure.
And I thought it was just birds of the night, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But, you know, I know the juncos, you know, and I know all the birds at the feeder and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But is there any clue you can give us as listeners how to spot these really cool animals?
Yeah, it's this time of year is a good time to be out there. You do have to, get out in the wintertime, and it's much easier to spot them without leaves on the trees. Obviously, you can, as I say, great horned owls will be using a variety of nests. They're not nest builders themselves; they'll take other birds' nests. So you look for those hawk nests or crow nests. Barred owls are a little tougher. All of them tend to roost in, particularly if you can find a pine grove. They'll often
just one minute.
Sure.
Between the barred
mm-hmm.
and the barn owl,
right.
What's the habitat differential?
A big difference. Barred owls are very woodland-oriented critters, and barn owls are much more open country. Barn, B-A-R-N, owls, in fact...
Does that mean that literally they
yes.
Nest in barns?
Yes, they're often they're hole nesters exclusively, and will nest in often in human structures, old barns, and eat the mice that are there. Which is one of the reasons that they're now very uncommon in the state. Is that a lot of our barns and the farming practices that promote a lot of small rodents are gone. So
they're gone, yeah.
Right.
Mark, we appreciate the calls and the great questions. We have
some
other callers and emails. Here's an email, Jim, from Matt in Waterloo, who wants to know if there's any owl clubs or organizations in the state that you can join if you're interested in owls.
I would say none that I know of exclusive to owls. But other than a lot of the county conservation boards have programs for owls called, and OWL stands for Older, Wiser, Livelier Seniors. so these are senior citizen programs. But a lot of there are an awful lot of Audubon societies around the state in various locations, and they have broad interests in owls. And they will actually take people out on owl prowls at night. A lot of the county conservation boards will as well. And this time of year is a great time to get out, look in some of those, I started to say in answer to Mark's question, look in some of those conifer stands, and you'll find owls roosting in there during the daytime, and that's when you get a chance to see them.
Wildlife Day with Jim Pease, Extension Wildlife Specialist, now emeritus. Right, Jim?
Right.
That extra word in, 866-780-9100. Bruce is in Muscatine. Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
Go ahead with your question.
Okay. Sometime in the recent past, and I believe it was in the National Geographic, there was a piece about mice on the seashore and how well their natural coloring camouflaged them from the predators, so that when one of them happened to be dark, the predators got them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm noticing an awful lot more dark squirrels than ever in my past seven decades.
That's a really interesting observation. It's probably not due so much to predation, although predation plays a role. The black squirrels that you see, and are you talking about really dark so that they would be a black squirrel?
They vary.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, right now I'm looking at one that's about halfway in between, and I can't mm-hmm. tell whether he's a gray or a fox. But
sure, right, yeah. This is called when you get the black pigment in a mammal, it's called melanism, and
mm-hmm.
Melanism is pretty common in a lot of mammal species. But it's called what we call in genetics a recessive trait. So in order to be seen, you have to have two recessives together to be expressed. Now, because it's a recessive gene, as long as it's not a disadvantage to the critter, and usually being darker is not a terrible disadvantage. In fact, it, as you say, it can be an advantage in some cases, depending on the background. Then it will tend to persist in the population. So over time, in a given town or city in Iowa, and I'm sure many of our callers from Council Bluffs or in western Iowa say, well, we've got all black squirrels in Council Bluffs, or nearly all. And the reason is that the melanism there has tended to persist in the population. It's not a disadvantage. Albinism, which is the opposite, the lack of color, tends to be a disadvantage because they tend to get lots and lots of skin problems, and they're more easily seen, especially in the summertime, so they tend not to hang around as long.
Okay, Bruce.
Can I share an owl story with you?
Okay.
Sure, why not?
My son lives near Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And up there, there is an operation that bans northern saw-whet owls.
Right. Uh-huh.
And it's kind of interesting. They catch them in nets. They bring them in 6-ounce juice cans with both ends out, let you hold them.
Uh-huh.
And they band them.
That's great.
And then we take them outside to let them go, and you open your hand, and they almost look at you and say, am I supposed to do something?
It's quite a great opportunity when you have this wild, live wild bird in your hand and watch them fly away. You're right. It's a great experience. I was once banding great horned owls with a friend of mine up in northern Alberta when I was a graduate student. And I mentioned earlier that skunks are great horned owls are our primary predator on skunks, and as well as cars.
Yeah.
But we caught a great horned owl, and we're going to band it, and we were weighing it. And immediately we knew the moment we caught it that it had eaten a skunk within the last couple of days, because, boy, did it reek. And I didn't think we could ever band an owl quite as quickly as we banded that one and let him go. So,
all right. Bruce, thanks.
Thank you.
Bruce, for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go next to Karen in Cedar Rapids. Yeah, Karen, you're on the air.
Yes. Oh, I've been trying to get through. I do have an owl thing, but for weeks to tell you that I had seen I'm not sure how you say it,
Pileated. Yeah.
I saw two of them, maybe three of them.
Oh, that's great.
I knew they were nesting around here, but with all the leafage, I couldn't see it. But in November, two of them were right side by side on the side of the tree I could watch them from. And there was other things flipping around, too, but I couldn't quite see if there was three or four of them maybe there.
Oh, that's great. That's
a
great observation.
And they've been around here for about 10 years, and that's only the second time I've seen them.
That's wonderful. What you look for, in the absence of the bird, you can look for sign that they've been there. And pileateds make these very long holes in tree. They're sort of rectangular. It might be as much as a foot or more long and 3 or 4 inches wide. So they're these long holes. Those are their feeding holes. Their nesting holes tend to be round, though, and they're 3 or 4 inches in diameter. So if you look around the trees where you saw that pair, look higher up and see if you don't find a round hole 3 or 4 inches in diameter. That may very well be the nesting hole.
Yeah, they have their very distinctive call, too, and I had heard it before, and so I knew, and I tried to see them, but they just stay on the other side.
Yeah, yeah. It's
during the... Yeah. So I must have been around their nest pretty much for them to make that much noise.
Could be, yeah.
But this time in November, I could see them.
Oh, that's
but
great.
I also, you said owls will get cats.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
In fact,
in
cities, if people let their cats out at night, particularly the smaller ones, yeah, they can, great horns can prey on them quite readily.
I live on a farm, and there's some, and there's wild cats around too, but they come to eat, but they've just been like disappearing, and I was blaming the coyotes. But then I saw a great big huge owl which lives in the barn up in the haymow.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's what's getting them.
Could very well be. Coyotes would take them as well, but
they would. And I was going to ask you. Then you said something about turkeys. Would it be on? Not turkeys. Eagles. I watched an eagle eat a dead wild turkey.
Right.
So they will do that every once in a while.
They're very effective carrion ears. Dead. They will. In fact, it's one of the problems that feeding of eagles recently turning up with lots of lead poisoning, and they've been feeding on carcasses of deer. That are often shot with lead bullets, and if they ingest the lead into their system, it tends to stay in their system, and they get lead poisoning from it. So they are carrion eaters. They're very opportunistic. They will preferentially feed on fish, but if they can't do that, if there's something else dead laying around, they'll certainly feed on that.
Yeah,
well.
It was very, very cold, and
sure.
Everything was frozen. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, okay, thank
All
you,
right.
And I love this program. Thank
yeah.
you.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Well, let's carry on. Sorry.
It's like the raccoons that it's a terrible joke.
Well,
the two vultures that were getting on the plane,
yeah,
and they had a dead raccoon under each wing, and the person at the TSA person said, "I'm sorry, only one carry on per customer."
Oh, no. Larry, are you there?
I am. We live in an area that's clear out. Crops on two sides of us and development on the other side. And we get lots of birds. Hello?
Yeah, you're on the
air.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air there, Larry. Go ahead.
Okay. We get lots of birds in the summertime. Can't hardly keep my feeders full. But in the winter, we have no birds. Is that because we don't have any established trees?
Possibly, but more likely, certainly the birds that are on your feeders in the wintertime, some of them at least, are here year-round, things like chickadees and nuthatches and the goldfinches and that sort of thing. But some of the species, such as the juncos and that, are migratory, and so they would be gone anyway. You may have some tree sparrows around right now that won't be around in the summertime. So the species mix changes in the summertime. The other thing is, in the summertime, because they're nesting, they're much more territorial, and so the cardinals that you may have half a dozen or more pairs that hang around together in the wintertime, summertime they won't do that because they're very territorial, so they won't come to the feeders nearly as readily in the summer as they do in the winter. And also the food changes. They will switch to berries and insects, especially to insects, because insects have much higher protein, which is what their young need in the summertime. So I often recommend to people that they either slow down or change, just maybe change feeds entirely. Only feed things in the summertime like the thistle seed for your small finches and maybe hummingbirds, certainly. But lay off the other seed stuff. You'll also tend to have fewer problems with ground squirrels and chipmunks if you don't feed the larger seeds in the summertime.
Larry, thanks a lot for the call. We want to get some other calls. Lots of people wanting to talk about owls here. Sandy in Ankeny. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Mr. Pease. I've emailed you before. I'm the lucky person that had two fledglings last year.
You were watching them, yes.
I know, and I hope they come back this year. But I know you have a ton of calls, and I want to ask you one question.
Okay.
Behind the ravine that we have open expanses between the trees of snow covered, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and the first night of the deep freeze, Friday, woke up in the morning, and we have pheasants. There was a pheasant lying out in the open, looked like it was dead. Later on, it got up. The very next morning, we had a coyote curled up right out in the open, and mm-hmm. the same thing, it got up. And I want to know, do they just go into a torpor, or why would they do that in the open? And I'll hang up and take your answer.
Sure.
Okay.
It's coyotes are well insulated. If they're healthy, coyotes are well insulated against the cold. They have lots of under fur. They'll curl up in a ball and put their the furry tail over their nose, so they'll stay warm as well. It may just be that particular spot, even though it seems like it's in the open, it may be out of the wind. It may be in the lee side of a wind area, and so it may be much warmer than it appears. that's the only explanation I can say.
I want to get an email in here, Jim, from a listener in Clear Lake. Last summer, just before a bad storm, at least three big owls appeared in the thick trees in front of our home just off of Clear Lake. They were very upset, presumably because of the approaching storm. They drew our attention because they sounded like a baby or small child crying very loud. Curiously, they were attracted to a fake owl that someone had placed on a deck rail to chase away other birds. They seemed to be trying to warn the fake owl of the storm. They seemed to be big birds, a foot or more tall. Could these have been screech owls?
No, if they're a foot or more tall, they're probably barred owls, and it depends whether or not they had the ear tufts. And I suspect they weren't trying to warn the other bird of the approaching storm. They were the adults and nestlings trying to keep this other owl out of their territory. And even though it was a model owl, that's what they were very likely doing. Owls, both great horns and barred owls, tend to have a pretty long childhood. In fact, you'll often hear their food calls well into the late summer, August, late August, early September. You'll hear this food call. If you get out at night, you'll hear this, "Mom, Dad, food," you know, and the parents are still feeding them, even though they're perfectly capable of going and getting their own by that time. They will, you know, expand that childhood and be fed as long as mom and dad will let them. There might be an analogy to humans as well there.
Just we're about out of time, but quick email from Gail. He says, "Thanks for your sound effects, Jim. I think the gurgling sounds I've heard in the wooded ravine below my house during the night. The ravine soon turns into a pond. So today I think those sounds may have been a barred owl.
Could
it
be.
It has always sounded like two of them. Always at night in the wee hours of the morning."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The screech owls are the ones that sort of gurgle that whistle through spit. And you can practice these calls in the shower, and your spouse or a significant other will wonder what the heck you're doing.
Well, the hour has gone so quickly. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of the other callers and folks who emailed, but learned a lot about owls today, Jim.
My pleasure.
Thank you very, very much. We'll see you back in a few weeks.
All right. Take care.
You too. Jim Pease, Extension Wildlife Specialist Emeritus with Iowa State University, concluding today's wildlife show here on Talk of Iowa, which was engineered today. Our student assistant and graduate assistant, Dave Henderson, took your calls. Thank you, Dave. Talk of Iowa returns on Monday at 10 o'clock here on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese for Greg Shanley. Thanks for listening.